And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nueva Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report Podcast, brought to you by our dear friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. We are back this week after, well, I guess we were back last week too. But anyway, we've got good stuff to talk about this week. Columbus Crew did the dang thing on Saturday. The more memorable game, certainly at Moffitt Stadium this season. And we'll be talking about that and so much more with Patrick Murphy. Pat, how are you doing, sir?
I am splendid.
Super. You sound like it. You really sold that one.
I do what I can.
We've also got Sam Fahmy. Sam, how are you doing, sir?
You know, I'm still on the high from that late, late, late goal.
Oh, I think we all are. We are going to be talking about the Skipper's shot heard around the world. A lot in this podcast. We'll also be talking about that with Ralph Schudel. Ralph, how are you, sir?
Just kind of, you know, hanging out and, found out the In My Feelings challenge. Just turned a month old, according to Alex Danick, the resident young lad on the panel.
Yes, we do also have fellow kid Alex Danick with us. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, I thought I would be tired of drinking the tears of Orlando fans at this point in the week, and I can tell you that it is absolutely not old yet, and it will not get old for days to come. I am thoroughly enjoying their tears about that call. Was it a flop? Oh. Yes. Was it amazing? Yes.
Oh, well, that, and then, by the way, did you see that Justin Meerum had the audacity to like an Instagram post by one of his ex-teammates? Can you believe that, dude? Seriously, he is terrible, terrible, horrible, horrible. Please come back to Columbus. Please come back to Columbus. Please come back to Columbus. We'll get to that, the J9 and everything, and you know, his
future. Tell us how you really feel, Bart, because I'm not sure we can tell what you're feeling.
There's, you know, there are a couple positions. The official Massive Report position, I'm saying that as speaking by a person that is paid by Massive Report and, you know, ergo by Anthony Precourt directly, as we're all shills for MLS and for the team, that I absolutely want us to get Justin Meerum back, but we'll talk about that. We'll see what you guys feel about. I've seen some pretty hot takes about it on the internet and online throughout the weekend. Of course, there's a lot to be read into with that Orlando game. Coming into the game, Pat Murphy, there were some questions about, you know, whether Justin Meerum would even be traveling with the team. He had not made it in the 18 for the past 2 weeks, I believe, prior to that. And folks were, you know, wondering what's it going to be like. Is he going to, you know, be back in there with Orlando struggling, but coming back, you know, to play his old team and all the questions surrounding him. We talked last week a little bit about the difficulty he's had in getting adjusted to his time in Orlando. And we found out pretty late in the week that no, he wouldn't be traveling. So no Justin Meerum for the Orlando City the Disney Lions, or whatever it is they're called again. It presented a problem, I think, a little bit for Orlando as well. But Columbus able to get on track against a team that we talked about last week they should have gotten back on track against.
Absolutely. This was an Orlando team that has struggled mightily this year. has already gone through one head coach, fired Jason Kreiss a little while ago, brought in James O'Connor from USL's Louisville City, formerly an Orlando coach back when their USL days. So somewhat familiar to fans there, but just trying to take things in a different direction.
Does Austin get credit for that too, then?
Yes, probably.
For developing him that coach too?
Yeah, probably. I'm not sure he ever actually coached in Austin, but indirectly, yes. So, yeah, it was a game that I think we all thought Columbus should win. You know, obviously this team has not performed well on the road, but coming back home, you know, this is kind of a game you have to have, given you have one win in your last five and I think one in the last eight or nine as well with a bunch of ties in there. But it didn't go the Crew's way early. 15 minutes in, Sasha Kljestan gets Orlando on the board. You know, kind of a weird play, cross from the defensive left side, flicked header, which threw off the center backs, but a lot of ball watching, and Kljestan just left open at the back post, able to put it past Zach Steffen. And, you know, it was not a good start from Columbus. After that, Orlando sat back. The Crew were certainly able to possess the ball, you know, move it around, do what they do. They got a number of opportunities in behind the defense. Harrison Offal was finding a lot of space on the right-hand side, but his crossing was not up to par. His finishing was even worse. Put one shot slash cross out for a throw-in. But he was getting in good positions. You have to give him credit for that, and the team was finding him there. So there were opportunities in the first half, just none taken. Moving to the second half, Giassi Zardes, once again. You know, if you expect a goal from Columbus, it's likely coming from the forward. He benefits from kind of a similar play to how, you know, the Orlando finish happened in the first half, with Nico Hansen getting around the outside on the right-hand side there, sending in a cross. Really did a good job to beat his man. Colin did a nice breakdown of that goal today on our site. But beat his man, and a nice one-touch finish from Giassi, almost like a heel flick that caught the inside of the post and tied the game. But then just a few minutes later, Orlando comes the other way on a break. There was quite a bit of argument from the Crew that there should have been a foul on Giassi Zardes that led to the counterattack. Jonathan Mensah got caught because near midfield. He stepped. He didn't get the ball. He couldn't foul the guy because he was already on a yellow card, and you know, then he leaves the back line a little exposed. Orlando's able to make it 2-1 through Stefano Pino. You know, just not enough guys back. Crew throw numbers forward. We get the debut of Patrick Mullins. We get the MLS debut of Edward Opoku. Mike Grella comes on. And then 85th minute, the controversial penalty kick that Alex was referencing earlier. Cross comes in from Harrison Offal. Patrick Mullins goes up for the ball. There is definitely some contact. There is not enough contact to make him fall down like he did. The referee said there was enough contact. They looked at it upstairs. The VAR did not advise Petrescu to look at the play again. So the penalty kick stood. Giassi steps up and scores again. That's number 13 on the year, I believe, for him. And then in the second minute of stoppage time, I believe, first or second minute of stoppage time, Crew plays one of 7,000 corners on the day, short to the top of the box. Well outside the top of the box for Will Trapp, who estimated the shot came from about 42 yards, which I think is a little overzealous, but a rocket from quite a ways out from the captain into the top corner, somewhat reminiscent of his first MLS goal, which came in Houston and was also a shot from well outside the box. But yeah, I think if the whole team could have tackled him, they could. It was only the guys, or they would. It was only the guys on the field, started by Zach Steffen, but that was one that they celebrated long into the night, I imagine. Crew get the win. Maybe not the best performance of the year, but you needed 3 points at home against a struggling Orlando side, and they were able to do that. Good to see them be resilient. That was kind of the message after the game, was the resiliency was key in terms of coming back twice. And, you know, you can never fault when you figure out a way to get 3 points, especially if you're trailing in a match.
One of the things that I kind of observed watching this game, especially, and you mentioned the corners, I think 17 corners. I want to say that's a record, certainly for the Crew this season. I think I saw something online that it might have been the most for a team in MLS since for a couple of seasons. He talked about all the crosses into the box, but for such a long time, it looked like that there were guys, you know, looking for someone else to, you know, come up and take that chance to, you know, take the chance on net. And obviously, you know, you mentioned that opportunity with Harrison Offal that he sent, a couple opportunities that he sent, you know, well wide or not chance, but I appreciated the fact that he was trying to put something on net. And see Will Trapp get that goal. I think that's such a huge thing. I mean, boost for this team. Obviously, we know about the hometown connection, the fact that he's the captain, the leader for this team. But a guy that looked like he was tired of looking for somebody else on this team to score the goal and create it. And so he took it upon himself, even if it was a little bit of a, you know, dare I say, ballsy move to take that chance. And he took it and he made the most of it. But, you know, could that be an encouraging sign maybe for the rest of these Crew teammates? You mentioned Jossie Zardes and how much they've relied on him. He scored 13 goals this season, nearly half. The Columbus Crew total have scored 27 goals, so he's almost scored half of them. And that is just not sustainable for this team, especially as well if Frederico Higuain misses any more time. I think we'll talk about him and his conspicuous absence from the starting 18 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they're going to need to find goals from other players. I'm not sure if Will Trapp is going to be the one who provides those goals, but I definitely think it's encouraging that he had the confidence to take that shot. I think a lot of other players, especially kind of defensive-minded midfielders, would not want to take that shot and would also potentially kind of get yelled at by their coach after the game if they did take that shot and would have probably been like, hey, it's towards the end of the game, stoppage time. You're really going to rip one from, you know, 40 yards out, try to, you know, score a screamer against a team with a fairly decent goalkeeper. But yeah, what a beautiful strike, you know, just absolutely perfect. And you could see what it meant to him and to the other players on that team. You could see the way they all mobbed Will. You know, that's a united group that they have there. And it speaks volumes to Berhalter and to that team. They feel the confidence to do things like that. So yeah, what a great moment. Definitely the highlight for me, although close second, has been the tweets coming in from Orlando fans. They've been amazing about that dive. If you haven't, I definitely recommend going to the Orlando City Twitter page and looking at the image that they posted that night of the Mullins quote-unquote foul and read the replies, because they are truly special. You have people arguing for a rematch to be ordered by Don Garber. You have people.
This is MLS. That's not necessarily out of question.
That is true. I mean, stranger things have happened. You get the occasional hashtag "Don't Save the Crew" as well, which is appreciated. You get people asking for the thoughts of Alexi Lalas, which is also pretty amusing. It's full of gems. It's just the gift that keeps on giving. Definitely highly recommended if you have 10 or 15 minutes and are looking for a laugh at Orlando City SC on Twitter. It's worth your time.
Well, and I want to kind of take us back to that, and obviously the PK. What are the thoughts here? Is that legitimate? Obviously, it played a pretty big role in the game and the result. If you're Columbus, I think you probably said we've been on the wrong side of this enough times that maybe we earned it, karma. I think there's still some questions about it.
Yeah, as like one of myself and another photographer were standing right, literally it happened right in front of us, and we looked at it and we're like, wait, what? Of all the plays that happened in the box and the pull downs and the tackles, you're gonna call this as a penalty? You know, so yeah, was it a legit penalty? No, not really. Did it get called? Yeah, it did. But the rhetoric about that MLS fixed this game for Columbus is just hilarious. And I don't even...
Looking out for us. Looking out for Columbus.
Yeah, the league's looking out for Columbus.
Well, this market.
And they want to put down those Orlando City fans.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you go back to previous episodes of our podcast in years ago, I mean, Orlando... what is it? Morgan used to call it... tail and paw or whatever. Anyway, but they actually had an article like in their first season on whether referees, MLS referees, were against Orlando, like deliberately. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, y'all have issues. And your issues run deep, apparently. So, yeah, to be honest, a fair score would have been a 2-2 tie, considering how the Crew played. But they played significantly better in the second half. And I think, you know, give credit where credit is due. Greg's substitutions in the second half really made a difference that, I don't want to say led to that last goal, but, man, for the first time in my life, I shout, shoot the ball, and somebody actually shoots the ball, and they score. So, the fact that it happened, I'm not saying I'll take any credit for it, but that's pretty impressive.
I thought it was rather amusing after the game. We had the post-game press conference. We're walking into the locker room, and Greg asked me about the penalty kick, and I was like, no way. And he was like, it looked like to me he got pushed in the back. And I was like, you know, I mean, there might have been some contact, but not nearly enough to cause that reaction. So today we obviously asked Greg about it, and he was pretty frank that, you know, he thought that there wasn't a ton there. He called it tough and said he understood Orlando fans being upset. I actually, just before we started this, published a story about how, you know, this is kind of what goes around comes around for the Crew. You know, he referred to the LAFC game where Zlatan and Lawless had a similar light collision that led to a PK for LA. Also, if you go back and look at that play, Zlatan's offside when the ball's put in. There's also a potential handball on that play. You go to that was the Galaxy game, the LAFC game, another potential offside goal, and, you know, in the Galaxy game they had a goal call. You know, there's been a lot that's gone against the Crew this year, and, you know, I think you have that throughout the course of a season, no question. But, you know, they finally had one go their way, and that's after earlier in the game they thought there should have been a handball in the box. I forget who the defender was, but you know, so I think that you know, it's always unfortunate to have a game, you know, end, so to speak, on a referee's call, especially if it's a bad call. As I wrote in the article, I think you can thank Will Trapp for kind of making amends for that, because if this game ends in a tie and it's that, you know, we're talking a little bit different here. And, you know, Orlando fans can be as mad as they want right now, but, you know, the third goal still happened. You know, I guess you never know what happens if they don't get the penalty kick. But I think, you know, if you're the Crew, you feel a little, you know, disappointed to have a game go that way, but it's about time.
Well, as the resident Italian soccer fan, I have to say that I always appreciate a good dive, and you can really tell a dive. A bad dive is one where you can tell, and you can clearly tell that Mullins dives because he gets pushed a little bit, and then he throws his arms up
and falls the wrong way.
Yeah, so
when, it's not even the right direction.
Yeah, so any sort of diving aficionado will immediately recognize the arms going up as, okay, this is a dive. So it was not a good one. It was one that the referees should have realized was a dive and not given the penalty. But you take what you can get. And, you know, win at all costs is kind of my attitude with soccer in general. You know, if you got to use a little bit of dark arts, you know, go ahead and do that. I appreciate the dark arts, as we've covered in this podcast many times. And so, yeah, it was a solid 3 out of 10 dive, but when MLS has 2 out of 10 referees, a 3 out of 10 will get it done. So happy to get the 3 points, happy to enjoy those Orlando tears, and let's go, Crew.
I do think that it should be pointed out, and I think it was Patrick Golden who said this. Somebody said it to me after the game, but that, you know, when the referee up in the booth looks at the replay and is deciding whether or not to tell the center referee, who ultimately makes the call, whether he should look at it or not, there has to be some sort of conclusive evidence that the call should be overturned. And I think that's why some other reviews have been, you know, you think about to that LA Galaxy game when the Crew gets the goal called back because they said the ball went over the end line, but I still haven't seen a replay that shows the ball over the end line. You know, those aren't supposed to be overturned, and if there's no conclusive evidence, then they shouldn't have the referee go look at it and waste everyone's time. In this, we can all look at it and say, yeah, he flopped, he sold it, you know, however you want to call it. But I think you can definitely, I think we can definitely all agree, and I think Orlando fans would have to agree if you got them honestly, that there is some contact. And so for the referee to, the VAR to tell the center referee to go look at it, you know, maybe he did his job correctly in the sense that there was contact. I don't see conclusive evidence here that we're going to overturn the call on the field, which was a penalty kick. So, you know, I think the guy did his job with still getting the call incorrectly, if that makes any sense.
Well, we talked about it, and I think it was definitely encouraging. We mentioned the second half specifically, the comeback and the fighting spirit this team showed coming back twice, especially in light of the way they've been playing. Just their second win within the last 9 games. Because of the win, they're now back to a even 0 in goal differential. But the defensive lapses continued. You mentioned, you know, the chances that Orlando had, and you know, it seemed like this team had to work so hard to get that Giassi goal, only to immediately concede one back to Orlando. And you know, as Harrison's, you know, continued to be an offensive catalyst, he's never been, you know, that sterling defender that you'd love to have at the right back position. Milton Valenzuela, he's been, I think as Patrick Gouldan kind of mentioned it last week, seems to be hitting that kind of wall, rookie wall, that almost to be expected, except especially with a 19-year-old kid. He's subbed off late in the game, doesn't even play the full 90 minutes. Are we concerned, and did you see anything positive, any positive developments on the defensive front in the back four, or is this going to continue to be an issue for this Crew SC team moving forward?
The thing, you know, I kind of take a little bit of a kind of offense, I guess, on Milton's behalf. I thought Milton was okay. You know, I don't think he was setting the world on fire necessarily on Saturday, but he was working his tail off. I was privileged enough to be on the side, on the bench side, on the left side, as in the Crew SC defensive zone, and just watching his work rate going up and down the pitch, he was kind of alternating. I think it was Pino, or however you say his last name, and Mueller from Orlando City. He was working his tail off to try to get in there. Granted, he did get kind of caught up in that one play that everybody was ball watching. I think I was even ball watching at one point too, but you know, he didn't really almost kind of trust that cross was going to get in there and kind of took off the accelerator a little bit. So, you know, brain farts happen. He's 19 years old, but I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was the young DP we have come to know and love at the start of the season, but I thought he was okay. Jonathan, I think, you know, for what needs to be said of Jonathan, you know, last year didn't really have a great start to the year. I know a lot of fans will be quick to say that. Really kind of grew into a role as the year progressed on. I think Jonathan's been kind of sublime this season. I think he's been very good. I thought he had another strong game, minus the silly yellow card. You know, he had a strange call, I think sometime in the first half, where he went up for a bicycle kick and ended up completely whiffing on the ball and getting one of the players in the back from Orlando City, that I thought, you know, with it being Major League Soccer, could have very easily been a red card too. But I thought Jonathan was good. Harrison was a little bit ho-hum. Josh was okay, you know, coming back after a strange game in New York City. Josh was good. And then, you know, obviously the MLS All-Star Zach Steffen keeping the game close in the second half with I think it was a double save or might have forced a shot off the post, but I thought the defense was good. Goals are going to happen in this system, but, you know, I think, you know, Crew SC really needs to, going forward, kind of limit those chances on the counter, because we saw, you know, 2 or maybe 3 successful counterattacks from Orlando City on Crew SC, where they generated really quality scoring opportunities, and if Zach Steffen's not back there, you know, this game could have got out of hand pretty quickly.
Well, and we don't know, I guess we'll touch a little bit later, how much longer Zach Steffen will be in a black and gold uniform for, well, I guess he's never really in a black and gold because he's a goalie where they wear different fun colors. But you get the whole point. We'll touch on that a little bit later, but I do want to mention someone else that was notably not in their black and gold uniform this weekend. Again, Frederico Higuain, conspicuously out of the lineup. There was the injury and the precaution that they held him out of the lineup in last week. This weekend, my guess was just that with the rain and the conditions and, you know, his age and coming back from that ailing injury that Greg Berhalter just didn't want to risk him. But Patrick Murphy, I know you and both Ralph have been covering this. Are there any other developments, anything to read into with that omission?
Yeah, it was said on the broadcast that Higuain was dealing with a minor back issue. After the game, Greg said that it was a back spasm that occurred on Thursday, and his back just tightened up on him. And, you know, they were trying to do whatever they could to have him ready for Saturday, but just didn't get it in time. You know, obviously they were without Sosa, who was got that silly red card in New York. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if they could have put him on the field, they would have. But with a guy like him, you know, if something's bothering him, I think it's better to sit him a game and let him get healthy. Talking to Greg today, he wasn't sure how much Pipa was going to be able to do or did this week. He was working with the medical staff, so he was going to check after practice on kind of his status. So we'll have more of an update as the week goes on, but it doesn't sound all that serious. You know, back spasms happen, you know, especially a guy a little bit older. That's not entirely uncommon. You see them in all sports and whatnot. So I'm not too concerned about this one. You know, assuming this doesn't linger, I you know, imagine this will be something we probably forget about in terms of why he missed this game down the road.
That said, Juan Argudo, Argudo, who filled in with Sosa out of the lineup and unavailable, and obviously Frederico Higuain, didn't really, I mean, he was invisible, to be honest, at least in my watching through the first half. And it looks like that could be, you know, ideally Sosa's coming back, but the crew could be in some trouble without that, that playmaker, because it didn't look like Pedro Santos was willing, albeit he, I think, tried to shoulder and take more of a load. We saw him taking all the corners. It doesn't look like he's capable of really being that go-to guy at this level. He hasn't been, you know, shown he's capable of being a good number two option, frankly, since coming over. So could this team be in some trouble if Frederico Higuain continues to miss any time, whether it's his back issues or another injury, especially given their overly reliance on Giassi Zardes for their goals?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the best player on this team. As far as I'm concerned, Higuain is still the best player on this team. So any sort of loss of a player of that caliber is going to be felt on the team, especially in Berhalter's system, which is so kind of pass intense and you know, possession intense. So yeah, I mean, we definitely miss him. You know, even when he's back, I think the concern is going to be how fit is he? Because I know in previous seasons we've seen him on the field, but there's clearly been something not quite right with him. So hopefully he gets well soon. It does seem like it's probably kind of a minor issue that'll be resolved before too long. But yeah, you always worry about him. You worry about his knees, his ankles, stuff like that. But as long as it's just kind of like a back issue, you know, in crunch time, something like that is maybe something you can play through. So that's certainly the hope, is that he can get back fully fit as soon as possible, stay fit, and kind of help get us into the second half of the season heading towards the playoffs.
There's something to be said about, like, how this team plays without Higuain. And it's like their possession game loses a lot of bite with him not being in there. So, yeah, I'm kind of with Alex. I really hope he gets back soon and it's not a major issue.
It certainly, the hope it remains, yeah, that because this team has not been able to, again, what we mentioned earlier, just 27 goals on the season, a low, I think, at least coming into the week, projecting at like the lowest goal total, or forecasting the lowest goal total in, you know, more than a decade. So obviously a concern, a player who's been whispered, bandied about as a potential addition, returning that might be able to boost this game is Justin Meram. Again, out of favor, clearly in Orlando City. I believe the teams he's been linked with per MLS website, I can't ever get his last name, Stekskal, I think it was the first report.
Stachel.
What? That, no, that's not, no. That's not how it's pronounced.
That's how he pronounced it.
That's ridiculous. Good on. Regardless, I believe the reports of the teams that have been linked with him include the Columbus Crew, Portland, and Vancouver, and conspicuously also FC Cincinnati. Some questions of how that would work as they are still in the USL. But just general, what do you think about the potential for Justin Meram returning to this team? Do you want to see him back? I think I've made my position, you know, somewhat apparent, but other people might have other positions.
Oh, heck yeah, I want Justin Meram back. What kind of a question is that?
We got to be provocative. We got to embrace debate, you know?
Yeah. And I'm going to go out on a little rant here because I've seen some people on Twitter be like, oh, no, we don't want him back. We don't want him back. He left. We can't have people leave and then come back. First of all, you know, his boss in Columbus sucks, okay? Let's just be honest with him. No one on that team wants to deal with this Anthony Precourt stuff. Nobody wants the uncertainty of knowing where they're going to be living 9 months from now. Nobody wanted to deal with any of that. If he wants to be like, hey, guys, nothing personal, but I got to go, that's totally cool with me, especially as things, you know, start to look more optimistic here. Maybe he wants to come back. Maybe he thinks, you know, hey, maybe I can get some more years here in Columbus. You know, heck yeah, let's bring him back. It's not working for him in Orlando. We got a boatload of money for him. We would have to give less than that boatload back to them. So it's just free money for letting them borrow J9 for a couple months. Why would you not
want
him?
It's like going on loan. You're not paying the salary.
He had what? 11 goals last season? 14 goals last season? I mean, some double-digit number. He had 6 assists. I know that. I mean, those are really solid numbers, and he is one of the most productive players. He knows the city, knows the system. Here's the dilemma. You know, you have a choice. You can either roll the dice on some random guy from somewhere around the world. Maybe they turn out like Justin Meram. Maybe they turn out like Pedro Santos. You don't really know. But either way, it's going to take them months, if not a full year, to learn how to play in the system, learn how to kind of integrate themselves with these other players, learn the city, learn everything that we do here. We don't have that time. Playoffs are, you know, going to be here before we know it, and we need a guy who can go right now, right now. That guy is J9. Speaking of this, you know, there is news out of FC Cincinnati where the Inquirer reporter, Charlie Hatch, who covers the team there, is saying that the club was never in the running for Justin Meram. And so maybe that was just something that, you know, Orlando threw out there, like, hey, you guys better pay more because it looks like Cincinnati's going to give us all the money back for Justin. So maybe we're going
to
get him.
There's literally just Don Garber saying, you know, look, Ohio fans, you want your Justin Meram, you can just go to Cincinnati. They'll do it.
Yeah, it's Don Garber from a payphone in Moscow where he probably still is from the World Cup. But in all seriousness, this is a proven goal scorer, a proven player in a Berhalter system. He already knows the players, already knows the facilities, already knows the training staff, already knows how this system works. We could slot him in next week, guys. This is the thing about this. He could be playing next week. I mean, you could literally just throw him in there. So I absolutely think bring him back, 100%.
A couple things. First of all, I'm glad Charlie has reported that. When I first heard about this with the Crew, I also had heard about Portland being interested and Vancouver's name in there. I didn't hear anything about FC Cincinnati, and when talking to Sam about it, I think that seemed like a name that might just be thrown in there to potentially drive up the price. And so, you know, I'm glad to see that it's being reported as such, because that never made much sense to me. But on the Justin move, I think that he would be great to have back. I like Justin, obviously a very good player. He was, you know, he created that position on the left side of the Crew's attack, as mm-hmm. Ethan Finley created the position on the other side. And they clearly haven't found anyone to fill that void. That said, I think the price has to be right. You know, Orlando is looking for their money back in this deal, which I think is ludicrous, and no team should give it back. But you know, I don't think you could break the bank on a guy who, well, since last end of May, has scored 5 goals to his 13 goals and 7 assists last year. Yep. And that includes the goal he has for Orlando this year. So it's not like you're getting a guy back who's in great form. He wasn't in great form the second half of the season. He hasn't played except for 45 minutes in the last 5 or 6 matches now, which means you're going to have to bring him in and get him fit and whatnot. So I do think, Alex, that there is a little bit of adjustment in terms of the fitness. I think that he would, you know, have to adjust a little bit with some of the newer guys on the team. Obviously, playing the left side, he would be playing with Milton Valenzuela, a guy he doesn't know at all. So while I think it would be a good move if the price is right, I don't think you can go out there and you know, break the bank on a guy like Justin. I also firmly believe that this team, regardless of whether or not they sign Justin, will go out and sign a foreign winger. You know, they have the international spots. They have the money. They're not going to spend that money on Justin because it's just not necessary. And, you know, I know they've been looking, and I firmly believe that they'll do both if they can, which would make for an interesting question of, you know, who then, you know, do you bench Pedro because he hasn't played well and play the two new guys? You know, how would you make that work? But I say if you can get Justin for a reasonable price, given his form over the last, you know, calendar year, then you do it. But, you know, I don't think they need to meet Orlando's demands. You know, I could imagine Orlando coming down as we get closer to the deadline.
It would certainly be interesting. And you talk about, I mean, a potential future where you've got to make a decision between Justin Meerum, Pedro Santos, and another, at least some sort of high profile winger. And that's the sort of
plus, you know, Nico Hansen, I think we thought, Christian,
yeah,
Martinez,
exactly. The depth that we thought we had earlier in this season, or we thought this team had, and that is shown, you know, maybe not to be able to last the length of the season. But so are we hearing, you know, just more anyone else that could be expected maybe to be heading out, going in the other direction? Obviously, the news, the story that, you know, gave Crew fans a heart attack last week was the news that I believe Bristol City had been kicking the tires at Zach Steffen. It appears that Crew did turn down their bid at upwards of around $3.8 million. I think a no-brainer for Columbus, but should Crew fans be worried about Zach Steffen, you know, potentially parting ways? The reporting had been that he wouldn't be, you know, he was somewhat amenable maybe to the move.
No, I mean, I don't blame him for looking at opportunities overseas. I think that he's in a position where he should be looking at opportunities overseas for his own development. I mean, I think he's a better goalkeeper than should be playing in Major League Soccer at any age, let alone as a kid, you know, who's going to keep getting better. So I think he should go test himself overseas. I think the price was something that they would have had to kind of look at. I think that they can get a lot more for him. You know, I know if I were running the Crew, I would want $8 million for him. Just, you know, $8 million US at least for a player of his caliber. When you think about some of the other prices that are being paid in England for players. One kind of issue with him going to England in particular is they have pretty strict standards on bringing over foreign players. He's not really capped a whole lot for the national team. Usually you need a number of caps in order to kind of get that visa.
And competitive caps. He's just played friendlies.
Yeah. So,
and there's not a lot of competitive games coming up in the near future.
Yeah. No, there's not. Yeah. So I'm not sure that England necessarily is his best option, although it would be great if someone could get him a work permit. But, you know, I would look at even kind of maybe second division in Germany, someplace like that would be a place he could really grow. I think he would do amazing
but
in
Italy.
But
that's where he was, wasn't he? I mean...
Yeah but
Freiburg.
Freiburg, that's it.
But I mean, I really think now that he's had time to develop, I he can look as, you know, someone who can be a key player, really test himself against great teams. I mean, I would he be Bundesliga caliber? I don't know. I'm not sure he's quite there yet. Maybe that's what they're waiting on. You know, maybe he thinks, I'm going to keep developing here until I am a top league, you know, European caliber player. I think he's going to get there. You know, he could easily start in Serie A for a bottom half team, easily. He could probably start for a bottom half team in La Liga. In Germany, Premier League, probably not. But he's improving every month, pretty much. You just see his game get a little bit sharper. And the development over the last year and a half has been incredible. So, you know, you give him another year, he's going to just be way better than should be playing in the league. So something to definitely keep an eye on. But yeah, I'm glad to see that the crew are willing to wait for the right price and that Stefan is willing to wait for the right opportunity. I think that's something that's really important, not just from a kind of a money standpoint and for the crew standpoint, but also, you know, Stefan's got a good head on his shoulders. He's going to wait for something that's going to help his career long term, and that's good to see.
I really think that I think you bring a good point about that 7 to 8 million range, but I could really see them holding out until the January window, and some desperate team looking to make a move in the middle of the Premier League drops the money for him because they need like that last piece to push him over the edge or to get them into you know, Champions League or Europa League contention or something like that. But 4 million from a championship league team. I don't know. He could definitely do better, and I don't think he's in a crew uniform next year at all.
I think 4 million actually, and I said this on Twitter early in the week. I think it's very, very fitting at the moment, and I know that's going to rub a lot of folks the wrong way. But like you guys talked about it, he hasn't played a competitive cap for the United States. Granted, he was involved in that now, what was it, a tie against the world champion France right before the World Cup. That was exciting. That's good. But I mean, he's got, I think a lot of folks are out there pricing his potential right now. And, you know, especially with how he performed against Atlanta in the playoffs, how he's done this year, I think his value is definitely on the rise. But I think right now, as you guys have talked about it, it's simply too early to cash in for Stefan. And he's smart about that. The team is very smart about that. And, you know, I think four right now, if we had to sell him today, I think is a great going rate, maybe five if possible. But that's a heck of a value for the team that's picking him up as well. But, you know, I think you guys are saying, you know, you get to this $12 million range. I mean, that's a great range for a goalkeeper. But, you know, I think the four right now is pretty fitting.
See, I mean, I guess my thinking is when you look at the other prices that are being paid for other players around the world, four is just low. You know, Liverpool just spent £65 million, you know, GBP, on the Alisson goalkeeper from Roma, for example. Other goalkeepers have gone historically for less than that. But we are in this kind of super inflated European transfer market right now where, you know, top players are going for, you know, well over $100 million U.S. dollars now. Do I think he's a $100 million player? No, of course not. Do I think he's 10% of a $100 million player? Absolutely. I think his talent level is, you know, there to be an investment as a prospect. I think that he has the potential to develop into a, you know, mid double digit player. I think, you know, you could see a team buying him like Bristol and then selling him on 3 or 4 years later for 20 plus million. I don't know if he's ever going to be one of the top goalkeepers in the world. I don't think so. But I think he's going to be a very, very good goalkeeper. I think he has the potential to be the starting goalkeeper for the United States for years. The marketing value in that alone is worth quite a bit. And I think if you kind of go back and you look at what Tim Howard might have been worth, and you adjust that kind of for the inflation with the prices that players are paid now, I think $8 million is fair at least. I think they may even try to hold out for double digits.
It's funny you mentioned Tim Howard, because I literally just looked up what he went for. He went to United in 2003 at 24 years old for $4 million. So I agree. I think that...
So with the cost of inflation and how, you know, just regular fees have risen since then, that's got to be at least $12
million. I think the record transfer back then, I believe, I want to say... let me see. Did Shevchenko go to Chelsea? It was either Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo, moving to Inter, or it would have been Shevchenko to Chelsea, which I think was in the 50-ish range.
Yeah, so, that was a ton back then.
Yeah, so you're talking 10% of the record transfer fee at the time was what Tim Howard went for. Record transfer fee now is north of $120 million. I think that's Paul Pogba. And so, yeah. A lot of money. I mean, potentially $10 million for Stefan.
I do think we should be clear that Howard had accomplished a lot more than Zach at that point. He'd been MLS Goalkeeper of the Year. He was playing for the national team at that point. He hadn't become the starter yet because of what they had already, but he definitely had more exposure, had been tested at a higher level, you know, and whatnot. But I agree. I think Zach's worth more than the $4 million or $3.9 or whatever it was that Bristol City offered. And I think, you know, the fact that the crew turned it down show you that they believe that. I mean, Greg told us on the record that he believes Zach could play in any league in the world. Now, I assume he means throughout his career and not literally today. But, you know, obviously they have a high valuation for him, or at least a higher valuation than the $3.9, $4 million. And I agree with you, Bart, who has said all year anything the crew get with Zach Steffen past this year will be a bonus. I think with the knowledge that teams are making concrete offers for him, that it is very unlikely he ends up in a crew uniform next year, assuming the price is right. I also think that this is a smart move from a crew perspective outside of the money. You know, you're in the middle of what you hope to be a run of the playoffs. You've seen what John Kempen gives you, and you've seen Logan Ketterer in the Open Cup matches. It's not like Zach's value is going to decrease. Even if he were to get hurt, and I know he dealt with a minor knee injury, you know, a team isn't necessarily paying for him, you know, right now. And I know Bristol City has come out and said they need a goalkeeper and whatnot, but there will be offers for Zach Steffen because he's 23 years old and is playing at a pretty high level. So I'm not concerned that by waiting until the winter transfer you're going to get lowballed because it's halfway through the European calendar or anything like that. I think if Zach gets hurt, he still sustains his value because he's a young player and there's no reason to think that, unless it's, you know, something very serious, that he couldn't come back from it. So I think this was a smart move by the crew. If you can go on a playoff run, you know, say you can make it as far as you did last year or make it even further, and Zach Steffen is a big part of that, as he was in the playoffs last year. Plus, he gets to play the Mexico friendly on September 11th. I believe they play England and Brazil and maybe one other Italy, maybe. I don't know. They have some good friendlies lined up. I think that would only help Zach Steffen's value as you head into the winter transfer period.
I just have to follow up, though. Do we know that Greg Berhalter is the final say? Who is the final say on whether Zach Steffen plays for this team, whether this club accepts offers? I know there are lots, and this is, you know, putting on the devil's advocate and the tinfoil hat. We know that, you know, Anthony Precourt may not be, you know, as cash rich as some of the other owners in MLS. And if he's got an opportunity to turn a tiny profit, this might also just me also be being a very jaded Newcastle United fan as well, who's used to their owner taking any opportunity they can to make a buck on a player. And sometimes the manager to contradict the manager in any of those cases. Do we think that, you know, Anthony Precourt might look at the opportunity as this being an investment? He's complained about the amount of money that he's had to spend down in Austin. It's a way to recoup some of that. It's a sports venture after all.
Greg makes these decisions.
I appreciate that. Well, appreciate that confirmation.
Yeah, well, and to answer a little more, to give a little more, even if Anthony were making the calls, the way that the league has it set up with the money, you know, let's take the $4 million.
Oh yeah,
number.
They get how much of the cut do they get?
It would be so the league would in this instance, and it changes depending on whether a player was drafted by you or whatnot, but the league would get 25%. So the Crew would end up with $3 million. $750,000 of that could be used as TAM, I believe, TAM or GAM, one of the two. Some TAM or GAM.
Don Garber Fund Ups.
Yeah, and then the rest.
Don Garber Fund Bucks. It's the official title.
Right, and then the rest of the money you could use towards club-related things. Now that could be anything from fixing the fence at the training ground to buying down a designated player. So that money has to be used for Crew SC.
Mafre Stadium renovations. There you go. Right. He's able to cover that, fill up all the paper towels.
Right. So that money, you know, that money wouldn't just go sit in Precourt's pocket. And I think that's important to understand that it would be used for something Crew related. Now, as far as, you know, if the team moves down to Austin and if that money's still around, I'm not really sure how that would all work. But at least in terms of this year, $750,000, given the $4 million number, would be able to be used for transfers, and then the rest would have to be used for something team-related.
So what you're saying, basically, is that we have to sell Zach Steffen in order to replace the kiddie nets and the training field next to the actual field?
If they could get the press box to stop leaking on us and make it so the windows don't fog up during the game so we can actually see things, that would be great as well.
Let's sacrifice somebody else for this. I don't want to lose Zach Steffen. That would be a fun topic. Everybody should, you know, tweet at the Massive Report with which player you think we should sell in order to fix all of the crap that should be fixed just by default by our front office.
I think you'd have to sell everyone.
Please don't do that.
I think you'd have to sell everybody. Just for number of things that need fixing?
Our phones will go off constantly. Don't do that.
It's like the old, like, you know, the joke or whatever they have, like, in hockey. It's like, oh, yeah, they traded that guy for a bag of pucks, but literally in MLS, that's what you do. It's like, no, I didn't. I sold Zach Steffen so we could get Wi-Fi in club suites. It's absurd.
I mean, if we got $50,000 for Adam John, that would fix the leaks in the windows. It would probably buy the kiddie nets. I don't know if it would fix all the bathroom doors.
Yeah, but are we gonna get is that $50,000 straight up from? That's after Don Garber's takes his cut. You know,
that's a good point. That's a really good point. And yeah, so we'll have to rethink that. But let's come up with a business plan and present it to the front office. And maybe we can get to work on this. Try to get some of those things. Oh yeah.
That's a good segue into, you know, the questions that we have surrounding saving this team, save the Crew. Obviously, another week has come and gone. Some interesting developments. Legally, you had PSV replying again in the local lawsuit in the Common Pleas Court. Some interesting perspectives offered from them there. But otherwise, let's talk some more about some of the developments. Alex, anything else new that fans should be keeping up to date on? We'll save the Crew.
Oh, man. So I think all signs are pointing towards, you know, more continuing positive developments. I think in terms of the lawsuit, things continue to go Columbus's way, or at least not go the way that Major League Soccer wants things to go.
It's taking time.
Yeah, yeah. And I know everyone's kind of anxious because things have gone quiet because of the non-disclosure agreement. That's as it, you know, should be, and as everyone expected it to be. It's not a reason to be concerned. I think that things in Austin will be interesting to watch over the coming weeks. August 9th will be the date that they kind of decide what's happening with that McCalla Place ground. You're starting to see some city council members flat out say that they don't want to do this there. There are a lot of concerns from residents about the impact it's going to have, particularly on traffic in the area. So even that is not going particularly well. I still think they're going to get something done with that McCalla Place site. I think that it's going to be a close vote, but I think they'll kind of push it through. What the terms of that would be, I'm not sure. I think that the plan that Anthony Precourt put in place initially may be changed. There's been some hinting that maybe they're working on incorporating kind of mixed-use housing, affordable housing, into their stadium plan. So what that design will look like, nobody knows. They're probably not going to have time to kind of do their due diligence on that plan. They could, in theory, kick the can down the road farther. I believe they have that ability. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. What we've seen consistently from PSV in this whole process is that they say, this is our drop-dead date. And then the city says, well, we're not ready yet. And then they say, okay, well, never mind. That's not our drop-dead date. This other date is our drop-dead date.
Isn't that what they've done already? Mm-hmm. Was it like end of June?
Yeah, multiple times they've done that. So whether or not August 9th is kind of the final or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I do expect more kind of positive developments for Austin by that time. But, you know, you never know what could happen in Columbus. You know, things could be wrapped up before then here. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, there's always the possibility that something like that could happen. And so we'll have to wait and see. But everything that I have heard has been, you know, sounds good to me. And so hopefully the city can get some sort of a deal done with Major League Soccer. I certainly think that would be the best thing for all the parties at this point. There's been a lot of kind of chatter on Twitter, especially this week. People are starting to get really upset about the way that the league has handled this. Not even Crew fans. Just kind of talking heads from around the league, people who cover the sport in America are starting to say, you know, that this is a bad idea. There's a Twitter account, really kind of well-known Twitter account from a guy named Pablo. I think his last name, you pronounce it Maurer. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He runs an account called MLSist. Former MLS guy. I mean, this is someone who has been writing about the sport for a very long time. You know, used to work for Major League Soccer, maybe still does, actually, maybe still writes for them, I'm not sure. But he tweeted out yesterday, I'll just read the tweet. He said, MLS has had plenty of missteps, but relocating Crew SC to Austin would top them all, in my opinion, would be just reprehensible. The league gets easier to watch every year quality-wise, but harder to support business-wise. And then someone kind of replied to him and said, the Crew are losing money, at least in part because the owner came into the league with rights to the Austin market and has very clearly intentionally tanked marketing efforts. While it appears the league has been complicit in giving them a schedule to drive down attendance. And he kind of quoted that tweet and said, it is incredibly, undeniably obvious that Precourt is suppressing attendance numbers, etc. There are half empty stadiums across the league where reported attendance is 15 to 20,000. Yet Crew routinely report thousands less. It's disgusting. And you had other people kind of jumping on that conversation as well, including Anthony DeSicco, who's, you know, a pretty big name in the sport. Big name, you know, the family's a big name in the sport. And he kind of quoted that tweet and basically echoed what Pablo said. I'm trying to find the tweet right now. I don't think I'm going to get it. It was yesterday. But really echoed what was said in. You know, these are people that are followed by the head honchos of Major League Soccer. You know, this Anthony DeSicco is followed by Dan Quartermarsh. You know, these guys are connected individuals. The league's going to be hearing what they have to say. And I think at the end of the day, the league is starting to get really nervous about the way all of this is playing out. I did find the tweet here. He quoted Pablo's tweet and said, "They have to know this by now. There are a lot of us who support the league with our time and money. Moving the crew jeopardizes so much more than it gains. Hashtag save the crew." So I think, you know, the tides have fully turned. I'm not sure there's anybody in the country at this point outside of the city of Austin, Texas, that wants this thing to happen. I think it becomes a lot more palatable even in Austin if the crew gets saved. So I it would not surprise me in the slightest if this gets worked out before that August 9th date, just so they can go to the city council and say, "Hey, one less thing you guys have to worry about. We've settled all that. It's all focused on Austin now. We've got the rights to have an expansion team here. Let's talk. Let's get this worried about. You know, don't stress about the legal stuff. We're all in here. They're going to keep their team."
Well, you know that MLS is taking it serious because they're sicking Alexi Lawless on him to quote tweet him and just take the most, you know, stupid contrarian take that he can possibly take. So people like us that are really successful media personalities that have podcasts will talk about him more. I mean, it's obviously it's not even you know, worth spending too much more airtime than we did, but it is interesting to see. I think you were right that window is shifting and more people are catching on to this, looking, and you're seeing, as again, this Save the Crew movement now, more than 9,000 people that have committed to getting tickets for next year, that they've got them through, approaching that 10,000 threshold. And again, showing, you look at the attendance that you had. I mean, who would have thought? And I think there are a couple ways to read into that. You looked at the announced attendance for that game on Saturday, 14,000 plus. That may have been, you know, the amount of people in there. If that is, that's a credit to the amount of people that waited through all the rain.
Yeah, and the delay.
I mean, at least a 45-minute or so delay, right? And not that the team was communicating any of that to fans who you had underneath. If you were at the mega tailgate, there were all sorts of fans gathered underneath the tents to wait out the rain. It was great to see city attorney Zach Klein and Bricker and Eckler, the law firm that's representing the city pro bono in that case. That they came down, they had their partners there, and you know, interacting with fans, showing their support, and then to see those announced attendance numbers, you know, if I were to, you know, to throw on the kind of a tinfoil hat, I'd say that there probably weren't quite that many people there, and they've been announcing, you know, the lowest number that they could possibly announce for all of these games. Why would they have changed it for this one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're in the process of selling an asset, you want that asset to appear as valuable as humanly possible, so that you can get the best price possible for that asset. So very interesting developments. You know, I really think, When you look at things from the MLS perspective and from PSV's perspective, if you are intending to sell this team, you are going to get the best price before that August date, because you're going to know that it's going to have a positive impact on your negotiations in Austin, one less thing to worry about. And also you can say, "Hey, if we don't get this done by August, whatever, you know, we're just going to move the team." So you want to keep your players, you want to keep all this stuff. You don't want to have, you know, a couple years off in between. You don't want to be in a San Jose earthquake situation. Oh, that really stinks. You better pay up. And so I think these negotiations could end before a lot of people realize it. I think it could sneak up on a lot of people. That's what I hope anyway. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm trying to keep my schedule as free as possible, because I definitely want to be there for that announcement when they make it. But yeah, hopefully that'll be the case, and yeah, it continues to look good, and what an amazing, you know, situation this has been when you really kind of step back from it. I mean, we take this for granted, but we've put up more of a fight even as things stand right now, than any other sports fan base in the history of everyone, as far as I'm concerned. And if we end up saving this team, it's going to be something truly historical. You know, it's going to be something that, you know, will go down as the first time that fans rose up and said, you know what, actually, I know you own this team, but it's not your team. You know, it's our team. You own it, but it's ours. And we're going to keep it, actually. And so that'll be something really unique if it does happen. And so hopefully we'll all be there for that moment. Hopefully it's right around the corner.
Certainly right around before then, though, I think on all fronts, it's going to be the New York Red Bulls as crew get back to work this weekend, heading out to beautiful New Jersey. I believe, right? Are we back home this weekend? I don't even know anymore. This whole schedule has been
Harrison, New Jersey.
So there you go. I thought it was out in New
There's
Jersey.
There's no home, no more home games in July.
I know. I was like, I don't think we've got any other. It's like, what, we've got three more home games left or something like that. Yeah, you get one a month after June. But heading out to Harrison, New Jersey, taking on the Red Bulls, New York coming off a win against the New England Revolution, third right now in the MLS Eastern Conference standings, but with some distance between themselves and the fourth place crew, and also those games in hand that they've held. They're averaging, I believe, two points a game. Yeah, three games at hand on Columbus and 5 points up on them. This is a team that is clicking at a high level. You've got Bradley Wright Phillips again, who's been, you know, one of the most prolific goal scorers in MLS over the past four seasons, and he's got 13 goals as well on the year. So this is a tough test for this Columbus team. And heading again to Harrison, where the Red Bulls, they have lost just one game on the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because we saw the Red Bulls earlier this year come in here and get a result, that 1-1 tie at Mafre. And, you know, a game that actually I thought the crew played pretty well in for the most part, just, you know, gave up that goal in the second half and couldn't find a second one. Going to Red Bull Arena is going to be tough. As you mentioned, Bart, only one loss there for the Red Bulls this season. In case people weren't paying attention, the Red Bulls also on their second head coach of the year after Jesse Marsh left I don't know if it's been announced that he's going to Germany, but I think that's like the worst kept secret ever, if not. But
all right, he's going to be an assistant with Red Bull Leipzig?
Yeah, something like that. But
how does that work? Like, is it just because they're on? Are they basically like a minor league team that you can just say, no, I want to promote the coach up to the majors?
So, funny story about that is they can't, through some legal document, they cannot be called Red Bull Leipzig. They are RB Leipzig, or if you're German, it's Rosenbowl Leipzig. But they have the Red Bull branding, which I've always been curious about that too. But they are still in the umbrella, much like NYCFC and Manchester City. They are very much in the hierarchy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, there's a number of Red Bull teams. I think there's one in Austria.
Austria too, I think. Yeah.
But anyway, so Chris Armas took over for Jesse Marsh, and the team has not missed a beat in terms of results. I think their only loss came to NYCFC, and I think Ralph pointed out to me earlier that was an Open Cup game. So, you know, they're trucking right along. This is a team that has played a very specific style, similar in that way to the crew, a different style with their pressing. I'll be interested to see. I haven't watched much of them since Chris Armas took over, how much he changes things, but him and Jesse Marsh are very familiar with each other, came up through the same you know, on those Chicago Fire teams in the early days of MLS and whatnot. So I imagine they were on similar pages. But yeah, it's going to be tough. This is a good Red Bulls team. And, you know, they proved it when they were here, getting a draw. And I'm sure they're going to be looking for all 3 points at home this weekend.
definitely going to be a challenge for Columbus. I think probably get some picks in here unless anyone else, I don't know if Ralph, you've been able to scout the team out yet or if there's anyone else that Brew fans should keep an eye on for, with the exception of, you know, one obviously Bradley Wright Phillips that can provide more of a danger for this team.
Well, the middle of the park, you got Tyler Adams. Tyler Adams has always been one of the big contributors to the team. And then a guy that's actually hurt Crew SC pretty frequently is Alex Muil, number 19. That is going to be a guy that the Black and Gold will have to close down on and not allow to run free. So that'll be a task for Harrison Offal and Milton Valenzuela. So hopefully your outside backs get a strong performance, but it, you know, weak backline play will not do it against the Red Bulls. So we've already established that Red Bull Arena is a very difficult place to play and win for sure. So it will be a tough one, but you know, no less. I think we're in for a good one on Saturday. Hopefully, I will be in Ann Arbor with Manchester United and Liverpool.
Oh, that's you know, that's the sort of devotion that you are, our loyal listeners, should expect from the expert pundits and commentators and loyal gumshoe journalists that cover and care about the Columbus Crew.
Hey, I put it on the schedule, man. I put it on the schedule.
Yeah, you know who else put it on the schedule? The Columbus Crew. Regardless, we'll get some picks in here after a quick plug again for our good friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, and online at oldnortharcade.com. Leading us off, it is going to be Patrick Murphy. Pat, what you got?
I don't feel good about this team playing on the road, you know, and for good reason. Obviously, only scored 3 goals on the road all season. You know, obviously got some results earlier in the year, but yeah, especially against a team like the Red Bulls. I'm gonna say 2-1 Red Bulls. You know, Crew scores, but the Red Bulls end up with 3 points.
Columbus not coming away well from Harrison. If you're gonna listen to Patrick Murphy, that's your own, you know, your own choice, your own decision. Sam Fahmy, what you got?
Oh, man. I still don't think they performed that well in this last game, and I don't know what the bug up there behind is, but they need to figure it out, and they need to bring that back, that defense that played the first 10 games. So I'm not going to quite call for a loss, but I will say probably looking for a tie, maybe a 1-1 or 2-2 tie.
Draw from Sam Fahmy. What do you got, Rep Shadell?
I'm going to go with a 2-0 loss. I think the Red Bulls are going to play pretty out of sight, and I think they're going to put this Crew SC backline under some severe duress.
Hey, Ralph, can you, in post, can you just insert a whole bunch of boos as you start giving the... Okay, cool.
Yep, it's done.
All right, and then Alex Stanek, what do you got? Come on, bring it back. You know what's up.
Yeah, so I will say I think we're going to have a really rough first half. It's going to be really tough. I think we'll probably go down maybe 1-2-0 down. I'm going to say 2-0 down in the first half. You know, you'll have the typical chatter from Major League Soccer Twitter. People will be cracking jokes and then come from behind victory 3-2. Crew at Red Bull Arena. I think we're going to shock the world. We've been doing that a lot recently, and I think it's going to continue. A nice come-from-behind victory. I'm going to say the third goal is going to come from... Let's go with a corner kick header from Josh Williams. How about that?
Ooh. Yeah, I had my own pick, but I'm just going to go with Alex's. I like that the best. 3-2 comeback winner with the Josh Williams header. Like, we'll give Harrison Offal one of the goals as well. He's going to get it. We'll give Harrison 2 of them. Anyway, Sam, sorry about our rating, but that should about do it for this week, unless anybody's got some other parting thoughts or, you know, just wants to cuss too and we can make everything all right.
Well, and thank you for making my job difficult tonight, but especially because I'm not running the timer. But a fun fact, guys, the Crew SC military appreciation jerseys are on sale for auction, I guess. Would anybody like to guess the price of the Will Trapp jersey at the moment?
I don't know.
$700.
The second he scored that goal.
It's not $700. You got to go higher.
Oh, wow. $7,000?
No, $1,050.
What about Josh Williams' torn shirt?
I was wondering about that. Ooh. Because they claim it's a match-worn shirt. It's currently going for $450, but I wonder if it's actually going to be that torn one or not.
It should be.
Yeah.
Easy there, killer.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Does anybody... in other news, I'm starting a GoFundMe for Josh Williams' torn game-worn shirt for that. So if you guys would like to contribute to help, you know, make sure that the Greater Columbus School of Boys and Girls can have that and enjoy it, go ahead and email Ralph Shadell about it, all of it. That's
team
all.
Team at SaveTheCrew.com.
Exactly. So that should do it for this week, which is one of the best weeks of the Massive Report that we've ever had, I'm pretty sure. No. sorry about that there earlier, guys. And otherwise, that should be a good time. We'll have a good one. We'll see you next weekend, buddies. Bye.
Hoorah!
Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on. Really stop. Good, stop.
This
stop.
Is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We'll probably put this in at the end. 3,